Please, if we could call the Higher Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Kaylee, would you please call the roll?
Chair Nunez.
Here.
Vice Chair Rodriguez.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Raywinkle Vasalinda. Representatives Bracey.
Here.
Coley.
Here.
Fitzenhagen. Frezen. Grant.
Here.
Powell. Saunders.
Here.
Spano.
Here.
Zimmerman.
Here.
Thank you, Kaylee. Let the record show a quorum is present. Good afternoon, members of the committee, members of the audience. Thank you very much for being here this afternoon. If I could just remind everyone briefly to please turn off their cell phones. And we have quite a bit of appearance cards, so those of you that would like to speak on behalf of one of the bills, if you could please fill that out in anticipation of your bill, and we can expedite that process, I'd appreciate it. We're going to move right into our agenda. Our first bill today is House Bill 541, related to public-private partnerships by Representative Stube. Thank you, Representative Stube, for being here. You are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Members, last year we did a public-private partnership bill that encompassed the whole gamut of public-private partnerships. That bill was unanimously passed in the House and the Senate, and the governor signed that into law last year. One of the pieces of that that we need to re-look at is specifically to our universities in the great state of Florida. They didn't feel like they could take advantage of the P3 bill that we had last year. So over the summer, with help from the Board of Governors, General Counsel, all the general counsels from all the universities got together with the stakeholders, and we put together this language specifically for the universities of our great state to take advantage of using public-private partnerships to fund infrastructure projects. I don't have to tell you that the dollars for capital improvement, or PICO dollars for capital improvement on education and higher education, are lacking in the state of Florida right now. And this gives the universities another tool in their toolbox to be able to fund infrastructure projects using a public-private partnership type of comprehensive agreement to fund different type of infrastructure projects that are needed on their college or on their university campuses. So with that, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Stube. Are there questions? Yes, Representative Zimmerman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would encompass any kind of building. This could be a stadium. This could be a biology building. This could be a parking lot. Is that correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Saunders, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you describe for me right now what the normal procurement process would be versus what, and compare that to what we would be creating in the bill?
You're recognized.
If I could ask a clarifying question. So as it relates to P3s for all other public entities right now, or as it relates to universities and how they procure bids for infrastructure projects now?
The latter.
Okay.
You recognize, yes.
Thank you. Right now it's your typical bid procurement process, and there's members of the Board of Governors and the universities here that can probably give you more details than I can. But it's your typical bid procurement. So the university wants to build, let's say, a dormitory. They send out an RFP, if you will, or an RFQ for submissions to propose to different interested parties to submit a bid to them, and then they go through that process. From my understanding, and I'm sure there's somebody here from the Board of Governors that can correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is any type of infrastructure project then has to be approved by the whole Board of Governors before it can be approved at the university level. So that's the process now. That process of approval will stay the same, but the ability to fund that will be able to utilize these P3 type funding mechanisms to fund that infrastructure project. So that would be the difference.
Follow up,
you're recognized.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful. I noticed in the bill that I was confused as I read it as to whether or not at the end of the day the universities or colleges that would take advantage of a public-private partnership here would own whatever capital project was finally completed. Can you speak to that? Is the inevitable end game here for them to actually own this?
You recognize?
Project?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The colleges currently can take advantage of it. Seminole Community College has, I believe it's a $250 or $300 million project that they're doing right now. The answer to your question specifically, the comprehensive agreements that the public entity, the universities would be able to enter into with the other involved parties into the P3 comprehensive agreement, they could dictate that, but the ultimate end goal would be, yes, that the public universities would own whatever infrastructure project that they would be wanting to fund. But I'll qualify that with, there's flexibility built in to however they want to do that. So let's say that, and I'm just gonna, and I know their lobbyists is here, but let's just use a USF Sarasota Manatee in my district. They're wanting to do certain infrastructure projects. If they wanted to have a private company buy the land to then build the project and then do a comprehensive agreement where they lease that back over a period of time, and then the ownership through that comprehensive agreement would go from the private entity who would own it, design, build, and procure the infrastructure project, then they would own that after the period of the comprehensive agreement. But there's flexibility in there for them to do it however they wanted to do it. So that kind of answers your question. But yes, they would ultimately own it, and I would defer to the general counsel for the Board of Governors to answer more specifics that I haven't given you.
Additional questions? Seeing none, there is quite a bit of public testimony, so we would encourage those of you that support to wave and support. First one is Richard Watson, Associated Builders and Contractors. Thank you. Adam Geary, Florida Chamber of Commerce. Already? Wonderful. Thank you. Kathleen Daly, Florida State University. Thank you. Casey Welch, University of South Florida. Thank you. Warren Husband, Florida Associated General Contractors. Great. Thank you. Marion Hoffman, University of Florida. Thank you. Dennis Crudell, Florida Atlantic University. Janet Owen, University of North Florida.
Wave support, thank you.
Wonderful. Janice Gilley, UWF. Thank you. Deborah Galley, FIU.
Wave support.
Very good. And lastly, oh, I misspoke, Carlo Fossey.
Students wave support.
Thank you. And Tola Thompson, Florida A&M.
Wave support.
Wonderful. Thank you all for being so cooperative. Does anyone else like to speak on this bill that has not filled out an appearance card? Okay, is there a debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Stube, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I just want to thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the coalition that all very graciously waved in support today of the building industry and the universities who very much support this great legislation for the state of Florida. And with that, I close.
Wonderful. Representative Stube having closed. Kaylee, will you please call the roll?
Chair Nunez.
Yes.
Representatives Bracey.
Yes.
Coley.
Yes.
Fitzenhagen. Present. Grant.
Yes.
Powell. Raywinkle Basilinda.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Saunders. Spano.
Yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
By your vote, show HB 541 reported favorably. Congratulations, and stay right there. Your bill is House Bill 543, which is relating to a public records exemption that's tied to the bill we just voted on, HB 541. Representatives Stube, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is a provision of the bill that we just discussed that discusses unsolicited proposals. I'll describe quickly what that is and then go into what the bill does. Unsolicited proposals would be if a individual in the community or a builder in the community saw a need at a university for, let's say, a dormitory or a parking garage, and they put together a proposal and they go to that university and say, hey, you know what? I know that you need a dormitory for your science building, or you need a classroom for your science building. Here's a proposal on that project for you. If they submit that proposal to the university, because it's an unsolicited proposal, they didn't do it through the typical bid process, which is protected under current law as far as the confidentiality of that, the bid that goes to the public entity, what this does is put a public records exception for the confidentiality of that unsolicited proposal. So what would you end up happening is you would give the unsolicited proposal, and then if it wasn't protected confidentiality-wise, then you would have other competitors that would see exactly what you just bid and then bid underneath that. So what this does is protect the process that is already in place for typical RFP, RFQs, and bids, but it puts it in place for those specific unsolicited proposals that the universities would get. With that, I'll take questions.
Thank you, Representative Stube. Are there questions? Representative Saunders, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that explanation, Representative Stube. am struggling to figure out how this is going to work, and I'm struggling with the idea of an unsolicited bid and where that comes from and why we are creating even a pathway for it. So maybe you can explain that in a little bit more detail, but I'd like to put a scenario at you and just have you respond to it. If a university were to receive PICO dollars and or decide to use the PICO dollars they have to start a project, a capital project, and then a private company decided that they wanted in on that and wanted to come in and do it cheaper, does anything in this bill through this exemption make it possible for the public for that to happen, or for the public to not see that this unsolicited bid for this project that's already in play has been received by the board?
You recognized?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You would see the specifics of the proposal if, one, the university did not want to move forward. And let me back up. Last year, the P3 bill that we all voted on and passed last year in the House had an unsolicited proposals provision in it for all public entities. So this is just saying the same exact thing specific to the universities. With that said, if the university did not want to move forward on that project, then it would be protected because they weren't going to move forward on it. It'd basically die at that point in time. If the university wanted to move forward on that project, there's time periods that are prescribed that would allow other people to also bid competitively or submit pursuant to that unsolicited proposal. So let's say somebody did an unsolicited proposal at the University of Florida for a parking garage, and the University of Florida wanted to move forward with building that parking garage. Pursuant to the bill that is before you, that you just passed, this is the records exception to it, somebody submitted an unsolicited proposal, they would go through the time period and prescribe that is in there, and then when all of the bids are in for that, then it would become public record at that point. So it would become public record, and the public would have the ability to get that information, but it's protected during that period of time that it would be competitive for other businesses to submit pursuant to that unsolicited RFP. Does that make sense?
Additional questions, members?
And there probably are other people here that can explain it better than I can, but...
Yes. Ranking Member Ray Winkle-Vasalinda, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And this might have been in the other bill, and perhaps it should have been a question that I asked of the other bill, but if there is an unsolicited bid, is there going to be an announcement that there is such a thing?
Okay. Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay.
There is a specific requirement set in the bill that would then be set in statute that if you receive it and you want to move, you're the public entity, or in this case the university, and you want to move forward with that project, you have so many days and times that you have to put that out for bid.
Okay.
Other interested parties have the opportunity to respond to what that unsolicited proposal is so that it's fair and equitable across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've gone through that process, then the bids would be opened and the university or the public entity would select which proposal they wanted to move forward on. So theoretically, if you submitted an unsolicited proposal to a university and they put it out pursuant to the statute, very theoretically there could be another company that could come and give you a proposal on that specific project that's more competitive than the initial start of the unsolicited proposal, and that would be what the university would go with.
And that's great. May I ask another?
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And so how long is this unsolicited proposal kept exempt from the public records? How long is the unsolicited proposal kept exempt from public records? For all time, or is there a limit?
You recognized?
90 days.
Okay.
Representative Grant, you recognized?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I just want to clarify, Representative Stuvey, I think following on Representative Ray Winkle-Vasalinda's question, anybody would have the ability to compete for something that the university decided to go forward with, if we're understanding correctly?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just briefly, what you're trying to do with the public records exemption is ensure that somebody coming after that decision has been made has to bid without knowledge of what the original party put forth.
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. Additional questions? Seeing none, we will now move to public testimony, and hopefully we'll follow suit with the waving and support. Richard Watson.
Associated Builders and Contractors of Florida, waving support.
Kathleen Daly, Florida State University.
Thank you. Janice Gilley, UWF.
Deborah Galley, FIU. And Carlo Fossey. Tola Thompson.
Right, wonderful. Thank you all. You're very cooperative today. We appreciate that. Anyone else would like to testify on behalf of this bill? No? Okay, seeing none, we will now move into debate. Is there debate? Ranking Member Ray Winkle-Bassalino, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Usually I'm a bear on public records exemptions, but this one is nicely and narrowly drawn, and I have no problem with it at all, so thank you.
Appreciate it. Additional debate? Seeing none, Representative Stube, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Yes, I will keep the trend and waive my close.
Thank you. Representative Stube, having waived his close, Kaylee, will you please call the roll?
Chair Nunez.
Yes.
Representatives Bracey.
Yes.
Coley.
Yes.
Fitzenhagen.
Yes.
Rezin. Grant.
Yes.
Powell. Ray Winkle-Bassalinda.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Spano.
Yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
Wonderful. By your vote, show HB 543 reported favorably. Congratulations and thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
We will move to the next bill on our agenda, which is PCS for HB 147. This is a proposed committee bill relating to concrete masonry education. Representative Caldwell was the sponsor. Is the sponsor of the original bill. Committee staff has worked with him on this PCS, so I'm going to ask him to explain it. Representative Caldwell, you're recognized to explain your PCS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, very simply, this bill establishes the Concrete Masonry Education Council. It would become a direct support organization under the Department of Economic Opportunity, the DEO, with a written contract between them. From the original proposal, the PCS reduces the number of board members to 13 from 15, specifies who gets the appointment, the governor, the president of the Senate, or the Speaker of the House, requires an annual financial audit, and provides for the reversion of funds and property should either the DEO or the council cease to exist. And members, this was an improvement on a bill whose basic intention is to allow the concrete masonry industry here in Florida to fund education opportunities throughout the state to ensure that we have individuals who are skilled in the construction and utilization of concrete masonry products. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Caldwell. Are there questions on the proposed committee substitute? Ranking Member Ray Winkle-Bassalinda.
Thank you, Chair. This seems like an excellent bill.
I would agree.
I would assume you would, Chair. But is there any other association that does this, or is this unusual? I mean, this isn't really on the bill. I'm taking the opportunity to ask that, and if you don't know that, I'm sorry if I put you on the spot. But it just seems like a great seems like a great way for associations to do this, and I wish the Granite Association, should there be one, would follow suit.
You're recognized, I believe, to answer that question?
Yes.
Somewhere in there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rebeca-Vesalinda. I don't want to presume to be an expert on all the associations and their design. We have dozens of direct support organizations throughout the state, but my knowledge on the framework of this ends and begins with this bill.
Okay. Are there additional questions on the PCS? Seeing none, we will move to I'm sorry. Yes, Representative Zimmerman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is this? How much does this increase the price of a block of concrete?
You recognized?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Zimmerman. It does not automatically increase anything. This is a voluntary assessment so that the manufacturers of the block, if they so desire, can contribute a penny per block in order to fund this operation. Ostensibly, that may or may not be passed on to the consumer depending on that manufacturer's profit desire.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any additional questions? No? Seeing none, we'll move to public testimony. Justin Fleming with Titan Block. Thank you. Carol Bowen, Associated Builders and Contractors.
ABC waves in support.
Curtis Leonard, Titan America. Jim Painter Masonry.
Waves support.
Thank you. Rocky Jenkins, CMEX.
Waves support.
Patrick McLaughlin, Masonry Association of Florida. Wonderful. Thank you. Is there anyone else from the audience that would like to testify? No? Okay. We will now move on to debate. Is there debate? Seeing none? No? Seeing none? Representative Caldwell, you are recognized to close on the PCS.
I hear that waving's the thing today.
It is the thing today, yes. Representative Caldwell, having closed, Kaylee, will you please call the roll?
Chair Nunez.
Yes.
Representatives Bracy?
Yes.
Coley?
Yes.
Fitzenhagen?
Yes.
Present?
Yes.
Graham?
Yes.
Powell? Raywinkle Vasalinda?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Saunders?
Yes.
Spano?
Yes.
Zimmerman?
Yes.
By your vote, show the proposed committee substitute for HB 147 reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Caldwell.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee.
We will now move on to House Bill 355 by Representative Porter relating to textbook and instructional materials affordability. Thank you, Representative Porter, for your patience, and you're recognized to explain your bill. I understand you have a strike-all.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Yes, would you like to explain the strike-all, please?
Well, if the Chair pleases, I can give a brief explanation of the bill, and then I can point out the differences between the bill and the strike-all.
By all means, go ahead.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, with the advent of much electronic material currently being used in our education system today, there needs to be some changes in order to bring the statutes up to date with the changing times. So this bill applies provisions of the textbook affordability law to instructional materials. It requires the Florida College Systems institutions to post on their registrar's schedule a course of courses a list of required and recommended textbooks and instructional materials for each class 14 days prior to the first day of class registration. It clarifies information that must be posted for textbooks and other instructional materials that don't have an ISB number. It requires institutions to post new, used, and/or rental prices for textbooks and other instructional materials for each course, and the website or contact information for the bookstore. Requires each institution to annually report the average cost of textbooks and the adoption cycles for high enrollment courses. Requires the State Board of Education and Board of Governors to submit recommendations to the Governor, Senate President, and Speaker for negotiating statewide agreements with publishers and vendors of instructional content, both print and digital. Requires annually the Florida College System and State University System institutions to provide their textbook and other instructional material affordability policies and procedures, and requires the preeminent state research university for online learning to include the cost of instructional materials in their determination of tuition for the online degree program. And there are some differences, obviously, between the bill and the strike-all. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. And you have outlined all of that in your presentation, correct?
Yes.
Wonderful. Are there questions of Representative Porter? You're recognized, Representative Zimmerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anything in this bill that requires that if a student purchases the textbook that the instructor actually use that textbook in the class, especially if it was written by that instructor?
You're recognized.
There is there's a requirement that packages that are used or that are required to be purchased are actually used in the classroom. So yes, if there are additional materials that accompany that particular textbook, there has to be an assurance that those additional materials will be used by the class and by the student.
Follow up, or Representative Powell, you recognized?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Porter, for bringing this great bill forward to us today. It's another way we continue to move education forward by making it more affordable. Question, with regard to the 3 years for textbooks before they can be revised, and I know there's implications where that can be changed, is that for all textbooks, or how do history books fall into that? I know I was in school during 2001, and I know the next year we had a new history book to talk about.
You recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is required for undergraduate courses, the three-year aspect of it, but there are mechanisms. In other words, the president or designee of an institution could make an exception if there were some substantial change that needed to be taught, and the textbook or the instructional curricula needed to be updated in order to reflect that.
Follow up?
Just thank you for bringing this great bill forward. Oh. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Additional questions on the strike-all? Yes, Ranking Member Ray Winkle-Vasalinda.
Thank you. What is the What is the landscape now for this? Where are we now? Can you just explain a little bit of that?
You're recognized.
Right now, there isn't a whole lot in place. There's no timeline that the books have to be used for any length of time. There does not have to be any kind of an assurance that the materials that accompany the textbook have to be used during the course of the class. There is not necessarily much information out there about the cost of textbooks and materials that accompany a course in a very timely manner, so that the students know not only what they're paying as far as the cost of tuition goes, but as what will their additional cost be in regard to the educational materials that accompany the course.
Okay, ask another
follow-up. Yes, you're recognized.
Have you heard anything from faculty about whether they're for or against this bill, just faculty around the state?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a few concerns in regard to the 14-day provision prior to registration, because some of the colleges are wondering, you know, what do we do if we add a late course, and, you know, how can we be sure that we even know who the instructor is going to be, and therefore what requirements they're going to have as far as the educational materials. But we are working with those entities as we progress through the process to try and come to an understanding.
Okay. May I ask another?
Yes, you're recognized.
Has there been any assessment about how much this would cost or how much labor this would take as far as the colleges and universities being compliant with this new requirement?
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most of this is really already being done. It's more a matter of the time frame in which it's done.
Okay. One more.
Yes, you're recognized.
What are the penalties if the textbook cost is not put up 14 days ahead? You know, what is there a slap? Is there what is the deal?
No.
Do we know?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's no penalty at this point.
Okay. Additional questions, members? Seeing none, I have two individuals that want to speak on the amendment. Ashley Spicola. Okay, and Bob Boyd.
Yes, Madam Chair, we appreciate the representatives meeting the publishing industry on this bill, and we appreciate the strike ball amendment, and we would wait in support of the strike ball. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Is there a debate on the strike ball? Seeing none, Representative Porter, you're recognized to close on your strike ball.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the spirit and tone of today's meeting, I will wait my close.
Are there any objections on the strike ball? Someone else have another? Seeing no objections, show the strike all adopted. Now we're back on the bill as amended. Are there any additional questions of Representative Porter on the bill as amended? None. Seeing none, I have one additional public comment. Tanya Cooper?
Waive and support.
Great. Tanya Cooper with Florida Department of Education, waive and support. Any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Saunders, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Porter for bringing this bill and your presentation, and for acknowledging something I was going to ask questions about, but it seems like you're already working on. The one hiccup that I saw in the bill was that issue about 14 days before, and I think the intent is great. I mean, obviously, we should be giving students who are registering for these classes an expectation on how much their textbooks are going to cost, but I know at UCF, which is my home district, they'll open up registration for a course that you can apply for, and they won't even have a faculty member chosen. So I would hate to, like, pigeonhole one of those courses with a textbook set that a teacher doesn't want to teach from. So I'd love to work with you on figuring that out if it's helpful, and I'm just glad you're looking at it. Thank you for the bill.
Any additional debate? Yes, Ranking Member Ray Winkle-Vasalinda.
Thank you. I'm going to vote for the bill, and I am also appreciative of the 14-day working on that issue, because I do think you need to allow the colleges and universities to have that kind of flexibility. The other thing is, I would like you to look a little bit more about whether this mandate, frankly, will add labor cost and more burden on the colleges and universities, just to see where that is. Okay.
Thank you. Representative Fresno, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to be brief, especially on that point, because I think it was a good question to bring up. And I think if you actually look at the issue of textbooks and kind of how they're adopted and cost and how they're purchased, you could probably logically surmise that if you take this structure that Representative Porter is putting here, there will probably be a net savings as an overall. I don't think it's going to add any cost to the college. And then I think to the point on the 14-day thing, and it's just a suggestion, perhaps because it is true that there are times that a class is advertised, but perhaps the specifics of the teacher and other elements of the class are not, perhaps the fix to that is that what needs to be posted is a maximum price of textbook and allow the flexibility to be decided by the teacher once they come in. So just a suggestion, a debate, and strong support.
Any additional debate? Seeing none, Representative Porter, you're recognized to close.
Again, Madam Chair, I will waive close.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Porter, having closed. Kaylee, please call the roll.
Chair Nunez.
Yes.
Representatives Bracey.
Yes.
Coley.
Yes.
Fitzenhagen.
Yes.
Fresen.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Powell.
Yes.
Raywinkle-Vasalinda.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Spano.
Yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
By your vote, HB 355 is reported favorably as a committee substitute. Thank you, Representative Porter. Now we will move to our last bill on the agenda, House Bill 487 by Representative Rayburn relating to agriculture industry certifications. I understand there's a strike-all amendment to this bill as well, Representative Rayburn, if you would like to explain the strike-all.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. The strike-all for this bill, what the bill does in general, the bill creates a better pathway for agricultural occupations to make it onto the industry certification funding list. The bill does three main things. The first is it directs the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services in cooperation with the Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences at UF and the College of Agriculture and Food Sciences at FAMU to annually provide to the State Board of Education and to DOE industry certifications for farm occupations to be considered for placement on the industry certification funding list. Secondly, it provides a definition and qualifications for industry certifications. And lastly, it provides a definition distinction between industry certifications for non-farm and farm occupations. And Madam Chair, that is the strike call.
Thank you, Representative Rayburn. Are there questions? Yes, Representative Zimmerman, you're recognized.
I didn't think I was going to have a question, but I would like to know the difference between non-farm and farm occupations. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll turn to the language just to explain the difference. The only difference between the definition, what we're defining here in statute, is that for non-farm occupations, we're using the definition that's already in statute as it relates to how to get those occupations onto the industry funding list. It doesn't actually define what those occupations are. There's a previous definition that already relates to. And then it says for farm occupations, we'll use the new process of using the information from Department of Ag through IFAS and FAMU to make sure that we have the best available data.
Any additional questions? Yes, ranking member.
Thank you. I have a question I'm sure I should know the answer to, but what is the industry certification funding list?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the industry certification funding list is the list that comes from the board, State Board of Education, Department of Education, that provides the CAPE funding that helps pay for these secondary industry certifications for the exams.
Any additional questions? I have a few public comments. Grace Lovett, Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. Thank you. Adam Basford, Florida Farm Bureau. Brewster Bevis, Associated Industries of Florida. Thank you. Any debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Rayburn, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
I will wait close.
Are there any objections to the amendment? Seeing none, show the amendment adopted. Now we're back on the bill as amended. Are there any additional questions of Representative Rayburn? Seeing none, anybody else in the audience wishing to testify? Seeing none, is there debate on the bill as amended? Yes, Representative Fitzenhagen, you're recognized.
Representative Rayburn, I just want to thank you very much for bringing this good bill. It's always good to have something that's going to enhance our agricultural industry and make it easier for people to get better jobs and have it be more clear what high-quality things that we're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Rayburn, you are recognized to close on your bill.
We close.
Representative Rayburn, having closed, Kaylee, will you please call the roll?
Chair Nunez.
Yes.
Representatives Bracey.
Yes.
Coley.
Yes.
Fitzenhagen.
Yes.
Present.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Powell.
Yes.
Raywinkle Vasalinda.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Saunders.
Yes.
Spano.
Yes.
Zimmerman.
Yes.
And by your vote, show HB 487 reported favorably as a committee substitute. Thank you. Thank you. Members, I think this is a record on many fronts. Thank you all for your participation. And with that, Ranking Member Raywinkle Vasalinda moves we rise without objection. Show our meeting.